Star Wars, Dark Force Rising by Timothy Zahn, continued. Cassette number 7, side 1. Han thought it over. It was still crazy, but not nearly as crazy as it had seemed at first blush. Though if Felia thought he could stage a coup with 6 private dreadnoughts, he was in for a rude surprise. But on the other hand, "Wait a minute, Lando, this is crazy," he said. "If they're plotting against Mon Mothma, why bring us here?" Lando hissed softly between his teeth. "Well, that brings us to the worst-case scenario, Han, old buddy. Namely, that your friend the Senator is a complete phony, and that what we've got here is a giant Imperial scam." Han blinked. "Now you've lost me." "Think about it," Lando urged, lowering his voice as a group of uniformed men rounded a corner of one of the buildings and headed off in another direction. "Garm Bel Iblis, supposedly killed, suddenly returned from the dead, and not only alive, but with his own personal army on top of it, an army that neither of us has ever heard of." "Yeah, but Bel Iblis wasn't exactly a recluse," Han pointed out. "There were a lot of holos and recordings of him when I was growing up. You'd have to go to a lot of effort to look and sound that much like him." "If you had those records handy to compare him with, sure," Lando agreed. "But all you've got is memories. It wouldn't take that much effort to rig a fairly close copy. And we know that this base has been sitting here for more than a year, maybe abandoned by someone else. And it wouldn't take much effort to throw a fake army together, not for the Empire." Han shook his head. "You're skating on drive trails, Lando. The Empire's not going to go to this much effort just for us." "Maybe they didn't," Lando said. "Maybe it was for Felia's benefit, and we just happened to stumble in on it." Han frowned. "Felia's benefit?" "Sure," Lando said. "Start with the Empire gimmicking Akbar's bank account. That puts Akbar under suspicion and ripe for someone to push him off his perch. Enter Felia, convinced that he's got the support of the legendary Garm Bel Iblis and a private army behind him. Felia makes his bid for power. The New Republic hierarchy is thrown into a tangle, and while no one's watching, the Empire moves in and takes back a sector or two. Quick, clean, and simple." Han snorted under his breath. "That's what you call simple, huh?" "We're dealing with a Grand Admiral, Han," Lando reminded him. "Anything is possible."
"Yeah, well, possible doesn't mean likely," Han countered. "If they're running a con game, why would they bring us here?"
"Why not? Our presence doesn't hurt the plan any, might even help it a little. They show us the setup, send us back, we blow the whistle on Felia, and Mon Mothma pulls back ships to protect Coruscant from a coup attempt that never materializes. More chaos, and even more unprotected sectors for the Imperials to gobble up."
Han shook his head. "I think you're jumping at shadows."
"Maybe," Lando said darkly. "And maybe you're putting too much trust in the ghost of a Corellian senator."
They had reached their quarters now, one of a double row of small square buildings, each about 5 meters on a side. Han keyed in the lock combination Sena had given them, and they went inside. The apartment was about as stark and simple as it could be, while still remaining even halfway functional. It consisted of a single room, with a compact cooking niche on one side, and a door leading to what was probably a bathroom on the other. A brown fold-down table console combo and 2 old-fashioned contour chairs, upholstered in military gray, occupied much of the space, with the cabinets of what looked like 2 fold-down beds positioned to take up the table share of the floor space at night.
"Cozy," Lando commented.
Probably can be packed up and shipped off planet on 3 minutes' notice, too, Han said. I agree, Lando nodded. This is exactly the sort of feel that Lounge should have had, only it didn't. Maybe they figured they ought to have at least one building around here that didn't look like it came out of the Clone Wars, Han suggested. Maybe, Lando said, squatting down beside one of the chairs and peering at the edge of the seat cushion. Probably pulled them out of that dreadnought up there. Experimentally, he dug his fingers under the gray material. Looks like they didn't even add any extra padding before they reupholstered them with this. He broke off, and abruptly his face went rigid. What is it? Han demanded. Slowly, Lando turned to look up at him. This chair, he whispered. It's not gray underneath. It's blue gold. Okay, Han said, frowning. So? You don't understand. The fleet doesn't do the interiors of military ships in blue gold. They've never done them in blue gold. Not under the Empire, not under the New Republic, not under the Old Republic. Except one time. Which was? Han prompted. Lando took a deep breath. The Katana fleet. Han stared at him, an icy feeling digging up under his breastbone. The Katana fleet? That can't be right, Lando, he said. Got to be a mistake. No mistake, Han. Lando shook his head. Digging his fingers in harder, he lifted the edge of the gray covering high enough to show the material beneath it. I once spent 2 whole months researching the Dark Force. This is it. Han gazed at the age-dulled blue-gold cloth, a sense of unreality creeping over him. The Katana fleet, the Dark Force, lost for half a century, and now suddenly found. Maybe. We need something better in the way of proof, he told Lando. This doesn't do it by itself. Lando nodded, still half in shock. That would explain why they kept us aboard the Lady Luck the whole way here, he said. They'd never be able to hide the fact that their dreadnought was running with only 2,000 crewers instead of the normal 16. The Katana fleet. We need to get a look inside one of the ships, Han persisted. That recognition code Irenis sent. I don't suppose you made a recording of it. Lando took a deep breath and seemed to snap out of it. We can probably reconstruct it, he said. But if they've got any sense, their code for getting in won't be the same as their code for getting out. But I don't think we have to get aboard the ships themselves. All I need is a good close look at that repeater display panel back in the headquarters lounge. Okay, Han nodded grimly. Let's go and get you that look. Chapter 16. It took them only a few minutes to make their way back to the headquarters lounge. Han kept an eye on the pedestrian and vehicle traffic as they walked, hoping they were still early enough for the place to be empty. Getting a close look at that repeater display would be tricky enough, without a whole bunch of people sitting around with nothing better to do than watch what was happening at the bar. What exactly are we looking for? He asked, as they came in sight of the building. There should be some specialized input slots on the back for the full-rig slave circuitry readouts, Lando told him. And there'll be production serial numbers, too. Han nodded. So they were going to need to get the thing off the wall. Great. How come you know so much about the fleet?
Like I said, I did a lot of studying.
Lando snorted under his breath.
If you must know, I got stuck with a fake map to it as part of a deal back when I was selling used chips. I figured if I could learn enough about it to look like an expert, I might be able to unload the map on someone else and get my money back.
Did you?
You really want to know?
I guess not. Get ready. It's showtime.
They were in luck. Aside from the bartender and a couple of deactivated serving droids behind the bar, the place was deserted.
Welcome back, gentlemen, the bartender greeted them. What can I get you?
Something to take back to our quarters, Han told him, giving the shelves behind the bar a quick once-over.
They had a good selection here. There were probably 100 models of various shapes and sizes. But there was also a door off to the side that probably led back to a small storeroom. That'd be their best bet.
I don't suppose you have any Vistolo Brandali on hand.
I think we do, the bartender said, peering back at his selection.
Yes, there it is.
What's the vintage? Anne asked.
The bartender brought the bottle over.
It's a 49.
Han made a face.
Don't have any 46, do you? Maybe stashed in the back room somewhere?
I don't think so, but I'll check, the bartender said agreeably, heading toward the door.
I'll come with you, Han offered, ducking under the bar and joining him. If you don't have any 46, maybe there'll be something else that'll do as well.
For a second, the bartender looked like he was going to object. But he'd seen the two of them having a friendly drink earlier with Bel Iblis himself. And anyway, Han was already halfway to the storeroom door.
I guess that'd be okay, he said.
Great, Han said, opening the door and ushering the bartender through. He didn't know how long it would take Lando to get the repeater display off the wall, check it out, and then put it back up. On the theory, it was better to play it safe. He managed to drag out the search for a 46 Vistulo for a full 5 minutes. Eventually, with cheerful good grace, he settled for a 48 Kibshi instead. The bartender led the way out of the room. Mentally crossing his fingers, Han followed. Lando was standing at the same place at the bar where he'd been when Han had left him, his hands on the bar, his face tight. And for good reason. Standing a few paces behind him, her hand on the butt of her blaster, was Irenis.
Well, hello, Irenis, Han said,
trying his best innocent look on her.
Funny meeting you here.
The innocent look was wasted.
Not all that funny, Irenis said tartly. Sena assigned me to keep an eye on you. You get what you came for?
Han looked at Lando, saw the fractional nod.
I think so, yeah, he said. Glad to hear it. Let's go. Outside.
Han handed the bottle of kibshi to the bartender.
Keep it, he said. Looks like the party has been canceled.
There was an old 5-passenger land speeder waiting outside when they emerged from the lounge.
Inside, Irenis said, motioning to the vehicle's aft doorway.
Han and Lando obeyed. There, sitting with uncharacteristic stiffness in one of the passenger seats, Sena, like bold Midanil, was waiting.
Gentlemen, she said gravely as they entered, sit down, please.
Han chose one of the seats, swiveled it to face her.
Time for dinner already.
Irenis, take the controls, Sena said, ignoring him. Drive us around the camp. I don't care where.
Silently, Irenis made her way to the front of the vehicle, and with a slight lurch, they were off.
You didn't stay in your room very long, Sena said to Han.
I don't remember the senator saying anything about being confined to quarters, Han countered.
He didn't, Sena agreed. On the other hand, a properly brought-up guest should know better than to wander unescorted around sensitive areas.
I apologize, Han said,
trying to keep a sarcastic edge out of his voice. I didn't realize your liquor supply was classified.
He glanced out the window.
If you're trying to take us back to our quarters, you're going the wrong way.
Sena studied his face a moment.
I came to ask you a favor.
It was about the last thing Han would have expected her to say, and it took him a second to find his voice again.
What sort of favor?
I want you to talk to Mon Mothma for me, to ask her and the council to invite Senator Bel Iblis to join the new republic.
Han shrugged. Was that why they'd brought him and Lando all the way over here?
You don't need a special invitation to join up. All you have to do is contact someone on the council and offer your services.
A muscle in Sena's cheek twitched.
I'm afraid that in the senator's case, it's not going to be quite that easy, she said. It's not so much a matter of joining the new republic as of rejoining it.
Han threw a frown at Lando.
Oh, he said carefully.
Sena sighed, half turning to gaze out the side window.
It happened a long time ago, she said, before the various resistance groups fighting the Empire were formally consolidated into the Rebel Alliance. You know anything about that period of history?
Just what's in the official record, Anne said.
Mon Mothma and Bail Organa of Alderaan got three of the biggest groups together and convinced them to make an alliance. After that, the whole thing snowballed.
Have you ever heard the name of that first agreement?
Sure. It was called the Corellian Treaty.
Han broke off.
The Corellian Treaty?
Yes, Sena nodded. It was Senator Bel Iblis, not Mon Mothma, who convinced those three resistance groups to agree to a meeting, and, furthermore, who guaranteed protection for them.
For a long minute, the only sound in the speeder was the hum of the repulsor lifts.
What happened? Lando asked at last.
To put it bluntly, Mon Mothma began to take over, Sena said. Senator Bel Iblis was far better at strategy and tactics than she was, better even than many of the rebellion's generals and admirals in those early days. But she had the gift of inspiration, the knack of getting diverse groups and species to work together. Gradually, she became the most visible symbol of the rebellion, with Organa and the senator increasingly relegated to the background.
Must have been hard for someone like Bel Iblis to take, Lando murmured.
Yes, it was, Sena said. But you have to understand that it wasn't just pride that drove him to withdraw his support. Bail Organa had been a strong moderating influence on Mon Mothma. He was one of the few people whom she respected and trusted enough to pay serious attention to. After he was killed in the Death Star's attack on Alderaan, there was really no one of equal status who could stand up to her. She began to take more and more power to herself. And the senator began to suspect that she was going to overthrow the Emperor only to set herself up in his place.
So he pulled you out of the alliance and started his own private war against the Empire, Lando said. Did you know any of this, Han?
Never heard a whisper. Han shook his head. I'm not surprised, Sena said. Would you have advertised a defection by someone of the senator's stature, especially in the middle of a war?
Probably not, Han conceded. I suppose the only surprise is that more groups didn't back out like you did. Mon Mothma can be pretty overbearing when she wants to be.
There wasn't any doubt as to who was in charge during the war, either, Lando added dryly. I once saw her make Admiral Akbar and General Madine both back down on one of their pet projects when she decided she didn't like it.
Han looked at Sena,
a sudden thought striking him. Is that why you've cut back your raids against the Empire? So that you'd be ready to move against Mon Mothma if she turned the new republic into a dictatorship?
That's it exactly, Sena said. We moved here to Peregrine's Nest just under 3 years ago, suspended all operations except material raids, and started working up tactical contingency plans, and settled in to wait for the senator's triumphal vindication.
Her cheek twitched again.
And we've been waiting ever since.
Han looked out the window at the camp passing by outside, a hollow sense of loss filling him. The legendary Senator Bel Iblis, waiting for a return to power that would never come.
It's not going to happen, he told Sena quietly.
I know that, she hesitated. Down deep, so does the senator.
Except that he can't swallow his pride long enough to go to Mon Mothma and ask to be let back in, Han nodded.
So he gets you to ask us to...
The senator had nothing to do with this, Sena cut him off sharply. He doesn't even know I'm talking to you. This is on my responsibility alone.
Han drew back a little.
Sure, he said. Okay.
Sena shook her head.
I'm sorry, she apologized. I didn't mean to snap at you.
It's okay, Han said, feeling some sympathetic ache of his own. She could have all the good intentions and logic in the galaxy on her side, but this probably still looked and felt to her like betrayal. A stray memory clicked. The expression on Luke's face just before the battle off Yavin with the first Death Star, when he'd thought Han was going to run off and abandon them.
Han, Lando said quietly.
Han looked over at his friend, shaking off the memory. Lando raised his eyebrows slightly in reminder.
We'll make you a deal, Sena, Han said, turning back to her. We'll talk to Mon Mothma about the senator. You talk to us about the Katana fleet.
Sena's face went rigid.
The Katana fleet?
Where your 6 dreadnoughts came from, Lando said. Don't bother denying it. I got a good look at that repeater display you've got up over the bar in the headquarters lounge.
Sena took a deep breath. No, I can't tell you anything about that.
Why not? Lando asked. We're all about to be allies again, remember?
An unpleasant tingle ran up Han's back. Unless you've already promised the fleet to Phalia.
We've promised Phalia nothing, Sena said flatly. Not that he hasn't asked for it.
Han grimaced. So he is trying for a coup.
Not at all, Sena shook her head. Phalia wouldn't know what to do with a military coup if you gift-wrapped it and handed it to him on a drinks tray. You have to understand that Bothans think in terms of political and persuasive influence, not military power. The typical Bothan's goal is to go through life getting more and more people to listen to what he has to say. Phalia thinks that being the one to bring the senator back into the new republic will be a large step in that direction.
Especially if Akbar isn't around to oppose him, Han asked.
Sena nodded.
Yes, that's unfortunately another typical Bothan move. A Bothan leader who stumbles is invariably jumped on by all those who want to take over his position. In the distant past, the attacks were literal, knives and usually death. Now it's been modified to more of a verbal assassination. Progress, I suppose.
Akbar's not a Bothan, Lando pointed out.
The technique is easily adapted to other races.
Han grunted. What a great group to have as allies. So do they just stab
or do they also help with the tripping?
You mean the bank transfer? Sena shook her head.
No, I doubt that was Phalia's doing. As a rule, Bothans don't stick their necks out far enough to concoct plots on their own. They much prefer to take advantage of other people's.
More like scavengers than hunters, Anne said sourly.
Probably explained why he'd always disliked Phalia and his crowd.
So, what do we do about him?
Sena shrugged.
All you really need to do is get Akbar cleared. As soon as he's not vulnerable to attack anymore, Phalia should back off.
Great, Anne growled. Problem is, with a Grand Admiral in charge of the Empire, we might not have that much time.
And if we don't, neither do you, Lando added.
Wounded dignity aside, Sena, the Senator had better start facing reality. You're a small, isolated group with a line on the Katana fleet, and there's an Empire out there hungry for new warships. The minute the Grand Admiral tumbles to what you've got, he'll have the whole Imperial fleet on you before you can blink twice. Bring the Katana fleet over to the New Republic and you get to be heroes. Wait too long and you'll lose everything.
I know that, Sena said, her voice almost too low to hear.
Han waited, mentally crossing his fingers.
We don't actually know where the fleet is, she said. Our dreadnoughts came from a man who says he stumbled on them about 15 years ago. He's thin, below average height, with a sort of weaselly look about him. He has short white hair and a heavily lined face, though I suspect much of that appearance is due more to some past disease or injury than actual age.
What's his name? Anne asked.
I don't know. He's never told us that.
She hesitated again, then plunged ahead.
He loves to gamble, though. All our meetings with him have been aboard the Coral Vanda, usually across gaming tables. The staff there seem to know him quite well, though the way he was throwing money around, that may not mean anything. Croupiers always get to know the losers quickly.
The Coral Vanda? Anne asked.
It's a sub-ocean luxury casino on Puntalumin, Lando told him. Does 3 and 7 day runs through the big network of reefs lying off the northern continent. I've always wanted to go there, but never had the chance.
Well, you've got it now, Anne said.
He looked at Sena. I suppose the next question is how we're going to get out of here.
That won't be a problem, she said, her voice sounding strained.
Already having second thoughts, probably.
I can get the Harrier to take you back to New Cove. When do you want to leave?
Right now, Anne said. He saw Sena's expression.
Look, no matter when we go, you're going to have some explaining to do to the Senator. We're in a race with the Empire here. Even a few hours might make a difference.
I suppose you're right, she said with a reluctant nod. Irenas, take us to their ship. I'll make the arrangements from there.
It turned out there was no need to make arrangements from the Lady Luck. Standing outside the ship's ramp as they arrived, clearly waiting for them, was Senator Bel Iblis.
Hello, Solo, Galrissian.
He smiled as Han and Lando stepped out of the speeder.
You weren't at your quarters, and I thought you might be here. I see I guessed right.
His eyes flicked over Han's shoulder as Sena emerged from the speeder, looked again into Han's face, and abruptly the easy smile vanished.
Sena, what's going on?
They know about the Katana fleet, Commander, she said quietly, coming up beside Han. And I told them about our contact.
I see, Bel Iblis said evenly. And so you're leaving, to see if you can persuade him to turn the Dark Force over to the New Republic.
That's right, sir, Han said, matching his tone. We need the ships, need them pretty badly,
but not as much as we need good fighters and good commanders. For a long moment, Bel Iblis gazed at him. I won't go to Mon Mothma like a beggar pleading to be let in, he said at last. You left for good reasons, Han resisted. You can come back the same way. Again, Bel Iblis's eyes flicked to Sena. No, he said. Too many people know what happened between us. I would look like an old fool, or like a beggar. He looked past Han, his eyes sweeping slowly across the buildings of Peregrine's Nest. I don't have anything to bring, Solo, he said, his voice tinged with something that sounded like regret. Once I dreamed of having a fleet that would rival the best in the New Republic. A fleet, and a string of decisive and pivotal victories over the Empire. With that, perhaps, I could have returned with dignity and respect. He shook his head. But what we have here barely qualifies as a strike force. Maybe so, but 6 dreadnoughts aren't anything to sneer at, Lando put in. And neither is your combat record. Forget Mon Mothma for a minute. Every military person in the New Republic would be delighted to have you in. Bel Iblis cocked an eyebrow. Perhaps. I suppose it's worth thinking about. Especially with a Grand Admiral in charge of the Empire, Han pointed out. If he catches you here alone, you'll have had it. Bel Iblis smiled tightly. That thought has occurred to me, Solo, several times a day. He straightened up. The Harrier is leaving in half an hour to take Brelia back to New Cove. I'll instruct them to take you and the Lady Luck along. Han and Lando exchanged glances. You think it'll be safe to go back to New Cove, sir? Han asked. There might still be Imperials hanging around. There won't be. Bel Iblis was positive. I've studied the Imperials and their tactics a long time. Aside from not expecting us to show up again so soon, they really can't afford to hang around any one place for long. Besides, we have to go there. Brelia will need to pick up his ship. Han nodded, wondering what kind of report Brelia would be giving to his boss when he got back to Coruscant. All right. Well, I guess we'd better get the ship prepped. Yes. Bel Iblis hesitated, then held out his hand. It was good to see you, Solo. I hope we'll meet again. I'm sure we will, sir, Han assured him, grasping the outstretched hand. The senator nodded to Lando. Calrissian, he said. Releasing Han's hand, he turned and walked away across the landing field. Han watched him go, trying to figure out whether he admired the senator more than he pitied him, or vice versa. It was a useless exercise. Our luggage is still back at our quarters, he told Sena. I'll have it sent over while you get the ship prepped. She looked at Han, her eyes suddenly blazing with a smoldering fire. But I want you to remember one thing, she said with deadly earnestness. You can go now with our blessings. But if you betray the senator in any way, you will die, at my hand personally, if necessary. Han held her gaze, considering what to say. To remind her, perhaps, that he'd been attacked by bounty hunters and interstellar criminals, shot at by Imperial stormtroopers, and tortured at the direction of Darth Vader himself. To suggest that, after all, that a threat coming from someone like Sena was too laughable to even take seriously. I understand, he said gravely. I won't let you down. From the dorsal hatchway connection behind them came the creak of a stressed seal, and through the Lady Luck's canopy, the patch of stars visible around the bulk of the dreadnought abruptly flashed into star lines.
"Here we go again," Lando said, his voice sounding resigned. "How do I keep letting you talk me into these things?"
"Because you're the respectable one," Anne told him, running an eye over the Lady Luck's instruments. There wasn't a lot there to see, with the engines and most of the systems running at standby. "And because you know as well as I do that we have to do it. Sooner or later, the Empire's going to find out that the Katana fleet's been found and start looking for it themselves. And if they get to it before we do, we're going to be in big trouble."
And here they were, stuck uselessly for another 2 days in hyperspace, while the Harrier took them back to New Cove. Not because they wanted to go there, but because Bel Iblis wasn't willing to trust them with the location of his stupid Peregrine's Nest base.
"You're worried about Leia, aren't you?" Lando asked into the silence.
"I shouldn't have let her go," Han muttered. "Something's gone wrong. I just know it. That lying little alien's turned her over to the Empire, or the Grand Admiral's outthought us again. I don't know, but something."
"Leia can take care of herself, Han," Lando said quietly. "And even Grand Admirals sometimes make mistakes."
Han shook his head.
"He made his mistake at Sluis Van, Lando. He won't make another one. Bet you the Falcon he won't."
Lando clapped him on the shoulder. "Come on, buddy. Brooding about it won't help. We've got 2 days to kill. Let's go break out a sabacc deck."
The Grand Admiral read the dispatch twice before turning his glowing eyes on Pelion.
"You vouch for the reliability of this report, Captain?"
"As much as I can vouch for any report that doesn't originate with an Imperial agent," Pelion told him. "On the other hand, this particular smuggler has fed us 52 reports over the last 10 years, 48 of which proved to be accurate. I'd say he's worth believing."
Thrawn looked back at the reader.
"Endor," he murmured half to himself. "Why Endor?"
"I don't know, sir," Pelion said. "Perhaps they were looking for another place to hide."
"Among the Ewoks?"
Thrawn snorted derisively.
"That would be desperation indeed. But no matter. If the Millennium Falcon is there, then so is Leia Organa Solo. Alert navigation and engineering. We leave immediately for Endor."
"Yes, sir," Pelion nodded, keying in the orders. "Shall I have Kabarak brought up from the Nstau?"
"Yes, Kabarak,"
Thrawn said the name thoughtfully.
"Note the interesting timing here, Captain. Kabarak comes back to honor after a month's absence, just as Solo and Organa Solo head off on secret errands to New Cove and Endor. Coincidence?"
Pelion frowned. "I don't follow you, sir."
Thrawn smiled thinly.
"What I think, Captain, is that we're seeing a new degree of subtlety among our enemies. They knew that the return of a survivor from the failed Kashyyyk operation would catch my attention. They therefore arranged his release to coincide with their own missions, in the hope I would be too preoccupied to notice them. Doubtless, when we break Kabarak, we'll learn a great many things from him that will cost us countless man-hours to finally prove wrong."
Thrawn snorted again.
"No, leave him where he is. You may inform the Dynasts that I have decided to permit them the full 7 days of public shame, after which they may perform the rites of discovery as they choose. No matter how useless his information, Kabarak may still serve the Empire by dying painfully as an object lesson to his race."
"Yes, sir." Pelion hesitated. "May I point out, though,
that such a drastic psychological fragmentation and reconditioning is well outside the rebellion's usual operating procedure.
I agree, Thrawn said grimly, which implies all the more strongly that whatever Organa Solo is looking for on Endor, it's considerably more vital to the rebellion's war effort than mere sanctuary.
Pelion frowned, trying to think of what might be on Endor that anyone could possibly want.
Some of the materiel left over from the Death Star project, he hazarded.
More valuable than that, the Grand Admiral shook his head. Information, perhaps, that the Emperor might have had with him when he died. Information they may think they can still retrieve.
And then Pelion got it. The location of the Mount Tantus storehouse. Thrawn nodded.
That's the only thing I can think of that would be worth this much effort on their part. At any rate, it's a risk we can't afford to take. Not now.
Agreed. Pelion's board pinged. Navigation and engineering signaling ready. Shall I break orbit?
At your convenience, Captain.
Pelion nodded to the helm. Take us out. Course as set by navigation. Through the viewports, the planet below began to fall away. And as it did so, there was the short trill of a priority message coming through. Pelion pulled it up, read the heading. Admiral, report from the Adamant in the Abrigado system. They've captured one of Talon Karda's freighters. Transcript of the preliminary interrogation is coming through now. He frowned as he glanced down to the end. It's rather short, sir.
Thank you, Thrawn said with quiet satisfaction as he pulled up the report to his own station.
He was still reading it when the Chimera made the jump to light speed, reading it very, very carefully. Chapter 17.
Mara had never been to the Abrigado Rey spaceport before, but as she walked along its streets, she decided it deserved every bit of the rock-bottom reputation it had worked so hard to achieve. Not that it showed on the surface. On the contrary, the place was neat and almost painfully clean, though with that grating antiseptic quality that showed the cleanliness had been imposed from above by government decree, instead of from below by the genuine wishes of the inhabitants. This book is continued at this point on the other side of this cassette. Please reverse or turn the cassette over now.